is The Dave Glover Show with Dave, Rachel, and Kevin. Sponsored by Michael's Flooring Outlet, the flooring experts. IGotFloor.com.
Well, this is not the Dave Glover Show. This is the Hancock and Kelly Show sitting
still
in.
Still a very good show.
For the Dave Glover Show with one of the nicest, cheerful.
Most positive.
Most positive people you'll meet
big
in St. Louis.
Right.
That's right.
Chris Ronji.
Absolutely.
Incredible. Let's go, baby.
You know, there's a pawn shop in Jefferson City.
What's it called?
Family Pawn Store.
Uh-huh.
You walk in, you say, this is my sister. No, never mind.
I don't get it. Pawn shop.
What? Family pawn. Pawn your family member.
Oh, I got it. Oh, John.
Buddy, how does it feel when one of these dad jokes falls flat?
Well, most of them do. And I don't worry about pleasing people, Michael.
Clearly.
I don't worry about not entertaining out there.
When do you suppose, at what point in your life did you just say, I don't care anymore?
Oh, it would have been probably 97. 1997.
Oh, come on.
You did not stop trying to please people.
Oh, yeah, no, I don't care.
Well, but you were trying to win an election post-1997.
No, I had already lost.
Okay, so your last election, you didn't care.
Winning elections. Yeah.
So you lost. You lost the second one. You said, that's it.
Who cares? Well, and when I lost the second one. So the first one, I was still a state rep or whatever, and I was still, we were young and just married, and no big deal. I went out and got a job. Public relations.
Yeah.
McDonald's. Ronald. Yeah.
Ronald McDonald.
He worked for me.
Nice.
And but the second election, we had a 2-year-old. My wife was 8 months pregnant. We took out a second mortgage on the house to make ends meet. I had a job, sort of, and your buddy got me fired from the job, Kelly.
Who did?
I'll tell you after you're on the break.
Okay. All right.
And so they weren't paying me anymore, and get through the election, I lose. I don't have a job. My car lease is up at the end of December.
Ugh.
And so I had 2 mortgages, no car, and 1.5 kids, and no job. So I thought, you know, this politics thing, and everybody goes into politics and gets rich except for me. So,
have you ever heard any of his McDonald's stories when
no.
he was working?
I didn't even know you worked there.
You grew up in St. Louis. You remember the VP Fair?
Of course.
It was a big deal, right?
Yeah.
I mean, some of the biggest crowds I ever saw in my life were the old VP Fairs back in the 1980s. But John used to run McDonald's down to the VP Fair because there used to be a McDonald's
boat
down
there. I used to go to the boat.
We had the boat down there. And, of course, Ronald was a big star in the VP parade every year. So I dutifully got him booked for the VP parade. You know, July the 3rd, whatever day it is. I'm sitting there in the office and phone rings. We don't have cell phones back then. And Ronald, whenever he's in costume, he's Ronald. He's not who he actually is, you know. So I got a phone with John Hancock. And he says, John, it's Ronald. I said, oh, hey, Ronald. I said, aren't you supposed to be in the parade? He says, somebody didn't get me a parking spot. I said, oh, I had to park 2.5 miles away from the parade. I said, oh, that's terrible, Ronald. And he says, do you know how hard it is to walk in these shoes? And I thought, hadn't given it a lot of thought up until that point. And so the poor guy.
He showed up dressed? He drove there dressed?
Yes.
Well, he's got to show up as Toronto.
His makeup's running. I mean, it's July. It's July in St. Louis, and the guy's walking 2 miles in his big red shoes.
Did Ronald ever change, or was it the same Ronald every time?
So Ronald actually, when I started there, Ronald was an older guy who was a retired firefighter. Nice guy.
Uh-huh.
And the new guy was kind of phasing in, and then the old guy retired. And so the new Ronald, and he was young, a magician. I mean, really a talented magician.
Of course.
The guy, making good money back then.
More than you?
He was making more than me, yeah.
Yeah.
And he had a 401k, which I didn't have. And and he had 150 appearances a year that we had to book him, you know, and one of which was the Veiled Prophet Parade. So, yeah, that was Ronald.
So he was mad at you.
Yeah,
he was not happy with me.
Was this the same Ronald that had the incident at the radio station?
Did I ever tell you that story?
Well, okay, go, please.
So, you know, McDonald's, I'm PR for McDonald's. We're rolling out the McGrilled Chicken Sandwich.
Great.
Yes. So I'm giving away Weber kettles at McDonald's restaurants.
Why?
They're grills, Michael. Oh. And this is a...
kind of defeats you want people to come to the store to get the food.
I get what he's doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But as part of our big rollout, I scheduled Ronald McDonald on a radio tour. Brilliant. Send him somewhere where nobody can see him in costume, you know? So... And he does. He goes, I think KMOX had him on that day, and as did Magic 108. You remember Magic 108?
Of course.
Yes. So I get a call later that afternoon from the host of the morning drive show, Don Clark. Don't know if you remember Don Clark. He did some news on television here. Great voice. And John Hancock, he said, Mr. Hancock, this is Don Clark at Magic 108. And I said, yes, Mr. Clark. He said... Ronald McDonald was in here today. I said, yes, he was. You did a great job with the interview. I heard it. I heard it all, Mr. Clark. He said, when he left here, he said, Ronald McDonald hit my car. And I said, surely, Mr. Clark. He said, I looked out the window, and that van hit my 1987 Cadillac Eldorado. I said, oh, Mr. Clark, that's terrible. He broke off my rearview mirror. I said, oh, that's terrible.
And he just drove away?
Yeah.
And I said, Ronald McDonald committed a hit and run?
I knew this couldn't possibly be true because our policy was if Ronald was in costume, he had to have a driver. Ronald could not drive. And I said, Mr. Clark, I'm sure Ronald wasn't actually driving the van. He said, I saw his yellow gloves. So I had to call Ron, get him. He's at home. And I said, hey, Ron. Yes? I said, you weren't driving the Ronald McDonald van today by any chance, were you? In silence. And he says, no. I said, and you didn't happen to hit a parked car at Magic 108, did you? Silence. No. And so after a couple of more probative questions, he came clean. And it was the side view mirror on the driver's side. So I had to call our biggest franchisee and explain the thing to him. And, you know, we're not going to report this to insurance, you know. So we took care of Mr. Clark's car. Got it fixed.
How about that?
So that was minus one for me on the VP parade and minus one for Ronald. Then Magic 108.
I saw his yellow gloves.
I retired.
Do you know how hard it is to walk in these red shoes?
I retired shortly thereafter from public relations.
So good.
Although my last day was New Year's Eve. So it would have been New Year's Eve of 93. It had been 30 years ago.
Wow.
Almost to this very day.
Wow, wow, wow.
And it was my last day in the office was December the 30th or 31st, whichever it was. And somebody stole the mobile unit. You know, we had the mobile. And because the mobile unit we featured prominently during the flood relief. We'd drive the mobile unit to where they're sandbagging and right. Serve them, you know, hamburgers and stuff. Got a lot of good press out of that mobile unit.
Right.
And somebody stole the darn thing the last day. And I get a call from, I don't know, Channel 5, somebody, for a comment on the mobile unit. Well, it's 4 o'clock. I'm done. Yeah. I said, we have no comment at this time. I walked out the door, turned off the lights, and that was it.
That's the next guy's problem.
I don't know if they ever found the darn thing. I'm sure they probably did.
So did you ever have an instance where McDonald Ronald wasn't going to be able to show up and you potentially were going to have to put the makeup on?
I was Bloogie. So we brilliant idea of mine. So we had the commemorative hockey cards which was a set of all the best blues players ever, and we were selling them at the restaurants and stuff. But I still got the set. It's got to be worth like $6 now. But so we were promoting these hockey cards, and so I developed a character called Bloogie. He was a blue guy,
yeah.
But he was gee because, you know, it's hockey.
Now you're going to make him happy.
So one of our franchisees wanted to have blue gee out at the restaurant, you know, and invite all the kids in. And I said, well, he said, who's blue gee? And I said, well, we really know there isn't one.
You made that up.
He said, "Well, man, I've been putting flyers up in the So this was over in Fairview Heights.
Oh no.
So I said, he'll be there. You know, Saturday afternoon from 1 to 3, and so there I was.
Dressed up like Blue Man Group or what you put on?
I had a blue shirt on and some blue sweatpants. And my hockey goalie stick and my little hockey mask, and I showed up and I talked to the kids when they came. How about the hockey card? Do you like these St. Louis Blues? And I was bloogie for two, signing autographs.
You're kidding me?
No.
Impersonating Ron Caron as bloogie?
Yeah.
I got some meat on the burger.
I had a real knack for this public relations stuff, I gotta tell you.
You just made up a mask. Got all this like, oh yeah. Yeah, I got a guy, his name's Bloogie. He's gonna be there.
Brilliant. Blue guy, but it's hockey blue gee. I mean, it just doesn't get any better than that. Well, we need to step aside. When we come back,
we're gonna have Don from Magic 108 on.
I saw his yellow gloves
on the steering wheel.
After this.
From KMOX.
Snow. It won't be long before we'll all be there with snow.
I like snow. I'm one of those people who,
like,
if it's going to be cold,
you know what? I hate that song.
Well, snow.
I love White Christmas.
Right.
That's my probably least favorite part of the whole movie. When they're singing this song on the train,
right.
I just don't like it.
Well, you know who picked it out?
Huh?
Matt Pajeski.
Yeah.
Who is some? He's, what are you? 28? You're 24 years old.
He's one of
but
the oldest.
He's 96.
Souls. Yeah, he's one of the oldest souls you'll ever meet.
I love the guy. I mean, I'm just being honest.
Oh, Matt Pajeski's great.
Yeah, we all love him. But I come in here sometimes. We're going to get back to snow in a second, and listen to Hancock and Pajeski talk rock and roll from the 1970s, of which. He is 40 years later, you know, and John, of course, knows it all, and so does Pajeski. It's incredible.
Why do you think you're like that?
It's just how my dad raised me on music.
He raised you right.
Good
he raised
and
you.
Good
he
TV
did
shows.
A fine job.
His favorite TV show is Sledgehammer.
Yeah.
What's that?
It was a comedy from the
80s. Yeah.
I would have thought it would have been the Rockford Files.
That's pretty good, too.
Yeah, Rockford Files was a fine piece of television programming.
We had Sledgehammer star. Was in Succession. He had a role in Succession. David Rashi. He's from Belleville.
Okay.
And so we had him on, and Matt texted me and said, you got Sledgehammer on? Like, what? How do you know about that show?
I wanted him to be in studio so I could bring my box set and have him sign it, but he was all on the phone.
He wasn't here.
Wow. You got the box set of Sledgehammer.
Set.
How many seasons is that thing?
I think
three?
It was just two.
Yeah, it was only two.
Okay.
Now, have you always been into nostalgic 70s and 60s and 80s
stuff?
That's
not nostalgic.
Not for me. It was before. I don't have any memories of those times, but I just am fascinated with it. And unfortunately, it makes me kind of hard to relate to with other people my age. But, I can't help it. I enjoy it. Well,
yeah, it's fun to be the youngest person in a room, though.
You may find that you want to start dating 60-year-old women.
We'll see.
Well, you've come to the right radio station.
All right, snowing out there. We were talking
about the snow. I don't mind the snow, and I'm one of those people that if it's going to snow, it might as well snow. And I don't know about you guys. I wasn't the greatest student in the world.
No.
I hated school. I hated every second of it.
I bet Raj was a good student.
I was a great student.
Yeah. Were you?
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't sit still. And so if they were forecasting snow 3 days from now, I quit doing my homework right then. For the next 3 days, we're off. We're not doing anything. And now kids don't even have snow days.
Oh, that waking up, if it wasn't bad enough the night before to cancel school the next day,
right.
And you had to wake up for the announcement, that was the best.
It was.
Right. Oh,
only
God,
when
I
it was actually canceled. There was nothing worse
than waiting for the announcement and it doesn't come.
Yes.
How about coming into the main room where the radio's on and they were reading the schools and they had gotten to your area in the lot letter
alphabet. And,
the
and they skip you.
They either skipped you or somebody said something and you didn't hear it. My dad would be like, "Oh, I didn't hear what they said. I'm going to listen to, we got to listen to Bob Hardy say all these doggone names again." And
it was the best.
And then some of those schools would cheat, right? Like St. Angeles would, you know, get named under the A's. They would put it out under A, and then, you know.
And then they hit them again on the S?
Right, yeah.
Oh, they got two shout-outs.
They had to read it twice?
Right. Huh. And then it always seemed like the rural people canceled school first. Like, you know, something R8, you know, R7 school district.
That's not rural.
Yeah, it is.
I went to Pattonville R3, buddy.
Oh.
That's right in the heart of Maryland Heights.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, what are the rural schools go by letters and numbers like that too, don't they?
They can, yeah.
Yeah.
But so does Pattonville.
Well, I knew what Pattonville was.
At one time it used to be rural, didn't it?
It probably did, Ron. Mm-hmm. Now that you mention it, out there, Maryland Heights and St. Anne. Yeah. Now they're bustling metropolises.
They
out
are.
There.
But did you guys know that they're like not having snow days anymore if we ever get snow? Kids have virtual learning days, and that's a result of the pandemic. So now, even though there's snow, you sit there in your house on your computer and still have to go through all the nonsense.
I think this is just my little theory of the future. You know how a lot of times you like to look ahead down the road,
right,
like the Jetsons? And so I think a majority of students will be virtually learning within 20 years in this country.
Well, that's then the leftovers are going to have all the money in these public schools.
Well, that's going to be an interesting transformation that could take place. I'm not saying it's going to, but I think it could. Because what you're seeing is more and more parents are increasingly dissatisfied with what their local school district is providing for them. And this virtual alternative that exists out there has gotten very sophisticated. It's all interactive now. The teachers, it's live. You've got other students in the virtual classroom there. You're able to, you know, exchange the notes. And I mean, just so much, you know, it's a different kind of experience.
But you don't get one of the most important parts of going to school, which is socialization. Now, I get that there's some kids for religious reasons and health reasons and other things that wind up being homeschooled. But I think the idea of kids having to be with each other and learning how to interact for the preponderance of humans out there is a healthy way.
How else are going to meet ladies?
Yeah.
You might be right.
Yeah.
But don't most people meet the ladies online anyway?
I guess you're right.
I'm just saying. And, you know,
but when you're in school,
all kinds of stuff.
When you're in school, that's the best.
Well, walking the halls,
crazy.
But it's also a very stressful time for a lot of kids. Like kids that get bullied.
Yeah.
You know, the kids that don't fit in.
Right.
So I'm just saying.
Or couldn't sit still.
20 years from now.
Don't you remember your teacher telling you to sit still?
No, I didn't have that problem.
Really?
Because I was in school and I thought, well, I should do the thing that we're supposed to do,
you
which is listen.
I just couldn't do it. I was just
What were your best subjects out there?
Oh man, I was great at English.
Yeah, I can believe
and,
it.
And writing and history.
Yeah. Okay.
I liked all that
math
stuff.
Math and science, not so much.
Oh hell no.
Yeah.
If I was good at that stuff, I would be doing something way cooler.
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
What was yours? I was social studies. That's the only thing I was really into.
Well, I did well in English. I did pretty well in math. I didn't go all the way to, you know, calculus.
Yeah.
Because they put me in the slow track back in the third grade because they didn't know better. But, boy, my mom was mad about that.
What does that mean, the slow track?
Well, so you're on you do the track system.
You have to come on a different bus,
so,
too?
You
it's
know,
the...
Apparently, they didn't appreciate my mathematical abilities in the third
grade. Pretty good at math, I think.
Well, I can add. Like when we're playing snooker.
You do very well.
Yeah. My dad had dyslexia.
Uh-huh.
And man, but with numbers, the guy was absolutely, I mean, he would go to that warehouse. He's a warehouse guy. And he would add up the stuff, and the other guy couldn't believe it. I mean, dad was just, it's 167.
Yeah.
And they just thought, wow.
Did he run a gambling book?
He was tough, man.
Maybe a card counter?
Yeah, I would think that somebody who has that kind of knowledge would be able to going commandeer.
Well, you know, now that's an excellent
point. Maybe he was running a book on the side and you didn't know
or
it.
Or hitting the blackjack. We didn't have the blackjack tables back then.
No.
You know, now.
Now you're, but you're a Sudoku nut, right?
I do. I'm huge into Sudoku.
Do you do that?
No.
Me neither. I tried to do it the other day on the way home from an airplane.
Yeah.
You know, they put it on the tape, the thing right in front of you on the person's seat.
Yeah.
And after about 30 seconds of slamming the guy's head in because I couldn't get the numbers right, I just gave up. And I was like, I don't know how Hancock does it.
Well, it's the grid. You just got to figure it out.
Yeah, it's the grid, Michael.
What was I thinking?
Well, we're going to come back, apparently. And and when we do, Chris had a fascinating interview earlier today about the Missouri legislative session. We're going to tackle some of those topics next right here on KMLX.
Hey, it's Hancock, Kelly, and Chris Ranji. Hancock and Kelly, we're going to take you all the way till 5 o'clock. We're sitting in for the DGS. We'll have the regular cast of characters. We'll visit with Dave Murray a little bit later, find out what the latest on this hamster-sized snow that's coming down, and where he came up with the description of snow being hamster-sized.
It's the hamsters.
It was big snow.
Yeah, but I mean,
for a while.
Who comes up with hamster as like the description? No, this was Dave Murray.
Oh, Dave did.
Yeah, this is a man who talked to the masses.
Oh, I thought it was something that John came up with. It does sound like something John would come up with.
It totally sounds like a Hancock word, which is why we're going to inquire. But you
I saw those yellow gloves. What a great story.
That is an excellent story.
Well, you know, you can rewind on the Audacy app if you missed
it. That's right. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Yeah. Download it. Listen live.
You know, that's how I listen to KMOX these days.
On the Odyssey.
On the Odyssey app.
In your house?
Yeah, in my house, et cetera, because I don't have Alexa in my house anymore. I turned her off because some of my buddies would come in and be like, Alexa, order, 12 cases of whatever, and it would show up. And I didn't know they did it because I was in the bathroom or something.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I had to turn her
prank.
Off. Yeah, what jerks.
I love that.
Would you do? You're going to do that to your friends now, aren't you?
No, maybe.
He's Mr. Positivity.
I'm Mr. Positive.
Yeah. Hey, if you do it for we need some paper cups around here. So if you find
and we need dish soap
and dish soap, mm-hmm. Exactly. You had Emily Manley on, Fox 2 reporter from the Capitol up in Jefferson City. She was kind of previewing what was anticipated for this upcoming legislative session. And John and I know better than anybody that this is what I like to call the show session. This is the session where not much happens. It's a bunch of these folks like to show up and do a show so that they can go back and talk to the extremes or whatever.
Because it's
half of them are running. Half of them are running for statewide office,
and the other half are
because it's an election season.
Yeah, exactly.
Election year.
But she enumerated a couple of things that she thought would consume most of the time. Let's go through them. One of them was the
sports gaming.
Sports gambling.
That's one that's near and dear to Ranji's heart,
dude. The fact that we don't. I would venture to guess that even the people who are against it, who are not really against it, know that we need it and know that we should have it. And we mentioned a couple of people in the Missouri legislature who held it up last time. And it's all to do with these video terminals in gas stations, these video machines.
Right.
That what this is all about is those companies who own those machines want them regulated so they can be everywhere.
Well,
that's what it's about. So
the company that's in here now does not want it to be regulated. So the folks that are vending the machines
it's a company from Illinois.
There's a couple of companies.
Yeah,
that want to come into the market.
Correct.
And have them regulated because where they operate. And honestly, if you're not transparent with these things and you don't know what the payouts are, not really sure if the taxes are being accurately recorded or reported. You know, there is a rationale to regulate these
things. I don't think they should be in gas stations. I mean, why do we go through the big vote on having – I'm for sports gaming. I want to be clear about that. I don't understand why these two things are being tied together. You're enumerating
it. Well, I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Because the people who are in favor of it realize that it won't get passed on its own because nobody cares.
Right.
but that's really what it is. So they say, well, we'll attach it to the sports betting bill. And then it'll get through that way. But nobody cares. But people do care about betting, sports betting.
Right.
Because, well, for a number of different reasons, it is a thing that a lot of people in the state do. A lot of people in the country have apps. And the other folks who realize it's inevitable know that we are missing out on an extraordinary amount of revenue in the state because people are literally getting in their cars. They are driving across the river to Illinois, or they're driving over to Kansas, placing their bets, and then coming back to the state. There are companies and businesses just across the river on both sides that are welcoming people. They're like, hey, yeah, come here and place your bets and also buy this while you're here.
Chris, I golf over in southern Illinois, so yeah. I drive through and I have to go through Sauget. And one day we're going there one day to golf, and I'm like, what is this traffic for?
Yeah.
It was everybody lining up to go to that gas station just on Route 3 once you get over the Poplar Street Bridge to literally pull into their parking lots, because I guess then their GPS is such that it says you're in Illinois so you can gamble. And then they literally, these people never even get out of their automobiles. They just drive back to Missouri. And Missouri is losing out on a lot of the money, and it's such
silly.
A backward thing.
It's
right?
so backward, but especially because it's inevitable. This is going to happen.
It is going to happen
eventually.
Yes.
So why are we? I mean, I know why. Because there's probably personal benefit for a handful of people in the government, and not for anybody else to attach this video stuff to this bill, which is why it failed last time because nobody cares about it.
And the time before.
Yeah, nobody cares about the video terminals. Well, nobody cares.
Somebody cares.
Well, when you go into the gas station and there's one person at the five terminals and they're all open, that person cares.
I've never seen them.
You've never seen them?
There's a couple in the pool hall that we bum in.
Oh, really?
I would assume that's what those are.
Oh, it could be. It could
I don't understand how that can be the case. I thought if you wanted to do slots and that kind of stuff, you had to go to a boat. But now you can do it in a gas station?
Well, apparently that's what they're doing, yeah.
But it's extraordinary to me that four of the largest entities in the state, the Cardinals, the Blues, the Chiefs, the Royals, all want this. And obviously there's a financial benefit to them because they can they can open sports books. They could do something.
Well, depending on how the legislation is drafted.
Right,
because the casinos would like to have the complete purview of all of those sports books. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's going to be interesting.
I know the Cubs in Chicago just this past season opened their sports book at Wrigley Field.
Yep.
DraftKings.
Right.
And it's really nice.
Yeah.
And you think all these teams aren't thinking, man, we could have one of those.
Sure.
And of course, financial benefit to them, but people want it.
Right.
People want it to happen, and it's revenue that the state is missing out on.
People need to quit electing the people they're electing. Because in too many instances, they are supportive of legal weed. They're supportive of raising the minimum wage. They're supportive of Medicaid expansion. They're supportive of gambling. Yet they're electing these people who vote constantly against the things they care about. Most of the social issues don't line up with the parties that they're voting for. Sorry, John, I was ripping on your party there for a second.
What else is new?
The other thing was the Medicaid reimbursement tax that hospitals put on themselves. She said this was going to take up a bunch of the time.
Could.
Talk us through exactly what that is, John.
So right now, the mechanism to draw down federal Medicaid dollars is a tax that hospitals and nursing homes pay out of their receipts. And it's called the FRA. Can't remember what it stands for. And they pay the FRA to the federal government. That then gets matched three or four or five times over by federal money, and it comes back to the state to pay for Medicaid services. And the hospitals, even though it's a tax on them, they want this because when the money comes back, it pays.
That's how they reimburse themselves.
In theory, that's how they make money for taking care of these Medicaid patients. And so it got caught up in the legislature last year over funding for Planned Parenthood. And they had to have a special session to deal with it, and eventually they worked out a deal. It's not a controversial issue in and of itself. I mean, you're not taxing the people of Missouri. It's the hospitals themselves paying a tax, and then the federal money comes back. And if you don't do it, then you've got this massive multi-billion-dollar hole in your Medicaid budget for the state, which is an increasingly large share. I mean, when you look at what the state budget has become over the course of the last couple decades, it's frightening. And most of that money is federal money that the state of Missouri spends. Wow.
And so who would be opposed to it? They just generally don't like the idea that there's a tax being imposed?
So in the Senate, in the state Senate, they're operating under the rule that you can filibuster. Uh-huh. And unlike in Washington, where nobody actually filibusters anymore, you just can't get 60 votes, so you just move on.
Right.
In Jeff City, you filibuster by standing on the floor.
That's what happened with the sports betting bill last year.
That's exactly
I listened to Bill Igel on the floor talk and read from Ronald Reagan's book.
Right. And so this issue got caught up with a filibuster last year, and then it got the controversy was we didn't want any of this Medicaid money funding Planned Parenthood to fund abortions. So that's what the issue was last year.
So it's going to be used as a political football to show people you're standing up against taxes, et cetera, right. when it's far more complicated than that.
Yeah, and and it's, I mean, it should be, the FRA should be a no-brainer, but we'll see what happens. The other thing she talked about was a couple of our legislators want to eliminate the State Department of Education.
Huh.
And so... You know, that would not...
Well, and so they just want to leave all the regulation up to the local areas?
Well, I'm not quite sure how they would fix that problem. I've seen it estimated...
I would imagine these folks are Republicans.
I would imagine if you actually did eliminate the State Department of Education, you'd have to have some kind of oversight. I've seen some speculation that it would actually cost more money to the state to split that thing up all over into different places. So we'll see, you know, what happens with that. Closing the Department of Education is a popular Republican issue nationally.
Why? Nationally. Why is it?
Because education is a function of the states. And a federal Department of Education is superfluous, and really the states ought to be able to run their own schools. That's the theory. And I happen to subscribe to that theory as a conservative. But to extrapolate getting rid of the federal Department of Education and say, okay, let's get rid of the State Department of Education, too, it's not the same issue.
You know, I find, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but sometimes it seems folks who say, well, it should be up to the states, are very selective on the issues they think it should be up to the states.
Sure.
It's not always across the board. It's certainly, I know that the abortion thing from last year, that was the whole foundation of it. It should be up to the states. But then you have people who want to make national 15-week bans or national rules that go along with abortion. But, well, wait a minute. I thought we were doing the local.
Hey, it's Hancock Kelly and Chris Ranji. Hancock and Kelly, we're going to take you all the way till 5 o'clock. We're sitting in for the DGS. We'll have the regular cast of characters. We'll visit with Dave Murray a little bit later, find out what the latest on this hamster-sized snow that's coming down and where he came up with the description of snow being hamster-sized.
It's the hamsters.
Hmm. It was big snow.
Yeah, but I mean...
For a while.
Who comes up with hamster like the description? No, this was Dave Murray.
Oh, Dave did.
This is a man who talked to the masses.
Oh, I thought it was something that John came up with. It does sound like something John would come up with.
It totally sounds like a Hancock word, which is why we're going to inquire. But you
I saw those yellow gloves. What a great story.
That is an excellent story.
Well, you know, you can rewind on the Odyssey app if you missed
it. That's right. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Yeah. Download it, listen live.
You know, that's how I listen to KMOX these days.
On the Odyssey.
The Odyssey app.
In your house?
Yeah, in my house, et cetera, because I don't have Alexa in my house anymore. I turned her off because some of my buddies would come in and be like, Alexa, order, 12 cases of whatever, and it would show up. And I didn't know they did it because I was in the bathroom or something.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I had to turn her off.
What a great prank.
Yeah, what jerks.
I love that.
Would you do? You're going to do that to your friends now, aren't you?
No, maybe.
He's Mr. Positivity.
I'm Mr. Positive.
Yeah. Hey, if you do it for... We need some paper cups around here, so if you find...
And we need dish soap.
And dish soap. Mm-hmm. Exactly. You had Emily Manley on, Fox 2 reporter from the Capitol up in Jefferson City. She was kind of previewing what was anticipated for this upcoming legislative session, and John and I know better than anybody that this is what I like to call the show session. This is the session where not much happens. It's a bunch of these folks like to show up and do a show so that they can go back and talk to the extremes or whatever.
Because it's half of them are running for statewide office.
And the other half are
because it's an election season.
Yeah, exactly.
Election year.
But she enumerated a couple of things that she thought would consume most of the time. Let's go through them. One of them was the...
sports gaming.
Sports gambling.
That's one that's near and dear to Ranji's heart.
Dude, the fact that we don't... I would venture to guess that even the people who are against it, who are not really against it, know that we need it and know that we should have it. And we mentioned a couple of people in the Missouri legislature who held it up last time. And it's all to do with these video terminals in gas stations, these video machines. Right. That what this is all about is those companies who own those machines want them regulated so they can be everywhere. Well, that's what it's about. So
the company that's in here now does not want it to be regulated. So the folks that are vending the machines
it's a company from Illinois.
There's a couple of companies, that want to come into the market.
Correct.
And have them regulated because where they operate. And honestly, if you're not transparent with these things and you don't know what the payouts are, not really sure if the taxes are being accurately recorded reported. You know, there is a rationale to regulate these
things. I don't think they should be in gas stations. I mean, why do we go through the big vote on having – I'm for sports gaming. I want to be clear about that. I don't understand why these two things are being tied together. You're enumerating
it. Well, I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Because the people who are in favor of it realize that it won't get passed on its own because nobody cares.
Right.
but that's, I mean, that's really what it is. So they say, well, we'll attach it to the sports betting bill. And then it'll get through that way. But nobody cares. But people do care about betting, sports betting.
Right.
Because, well, for a number of different reasons, it is a thing that a lot of people in the state do. A lot of people in the country have apps. And the other folks who realize it's inevitable know that we are missing out on an extraordinary amount of revenue in the state because people are literally getting in their cars. They are driving across the river to Illinois, or they're driving over to Kansas, placing their bets, and then coming back to the state. There are companies and businesses just across the river on both sides that are welcoming people. They're like, hey, yeah, come here and place your bets and also buy this while you're here.
Right, Chris, exactly. Chris, I golf over in southern Illinois. So
yeah.
I drive through and I have to go through Sauget. And one day we're going there one day to golf. And I'm like, what is this traffic for?
Yeah.
It was everybody lining up to go to that gas station just on Route 3 once you get over the Poplar Street Bridge to literally pull into their parking lots because I guess then their GPS is such that it says you're in Illinois so you can gamble. And then they literally – these people never even get out of their automobiles. They just drive back to Missouri, and Missouri is losing out on a lot of the money. And it's such
silly.
A backward thing.
It's
right?
So backward, but especially because it's inevitable. This is going to happen.
It is going to happen.
Eventually.
Yes.
So why are we – I mean, I know why, because there's probably personal benefit for a handful of people in the government and not for anybody else to attach this video stuff to this bill, which is why it failed last time, because nobody cares about it.
And the time before.
Yeah. Nobody cares about the video terminals.
Nobody cares. Somebody cares.
Well, when you go into the gas station and there's one person at the five terminals and they're all open, that person cares.
I've never seen them.
You've never seen them?
There's a couple in the pool hall that we bum in.
Oh, really?
I would assume that's what those are.
Oh, it could be. It could.
But
well
I don't understand how that can be the case. I thought if you wanted to do slots and that kind of stuff, you had to go to a boat. But now you can do it in a gas station?
Well, apparently that's what they're doing, yeah.
Huh. But it's extraordinary to me that four of the largest entities in the state, the Cardinals, the Blues, the Chiefs, the Royals, all want this, and obviously there's a financial benefit to them because they can they can open sports books. They could do something.
Well, depending on how the legislation is drafted.
Right.
The casinos would like to have the complete purview of all of those sports books. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's going to be interesting.
I know the Cubs in Chicago just this past season opened their sports book at Wrigley Field.
Yep.
DraftKings.
Right.
And it's really nice.
Yeah.
And you think all these teams aren't thinking, man, we could have one of those.
Sure.
And of course, financial benefit to them, but people want it.
Right.
People want it to happen, and it's revenue that the state is missing out on.
People need to quit electing the people they're electing. Because in too many instances, they are supportive of legal weed. They're supportive of raising the minimum wage. They're supportive of Medicaid expansion. They're supportive of gambling. Yet they're electing these people who vote constantly against the things they care about. Most of the social issues don't line up with the parties that they're voting for. Sorry, John, I was ripping on your party there for a second.
What else is new?
Oh, it's just telling. Well, the other thing was the Medicaid reimbursement tax that hospitals put on themselves. She said this was going to take up a bunch of the time.
Could.
Talk us through exactly what that is, John.
So right now, the mechanism to draw down federal Medicaid dollars is a tax that hospitals and nursing homes pay out of their receipts. And it's called the, FRA. Can't remember what it stands for. And they pay the FRA to the federal government. That then gets matched three or four or five times over by federal money, and it comes back to the state to pay for Medicaid services. And the hospitals, even though it's a tax on them, they want this because when the money comes back, it pays.
That's how they reimburse themselves.
In theory, that's how they make money for taking care of these Medicaid patients. And so it got caught up in the legislature last year over funding for Planned Parenthood. And they had to have a special session to deal with it, and eventually they worked out a deal. It's not a controversial issue in and of itself. I mean, you're not taxing the people of Missouri. It's the hospitals themselves paying a tax, and then the federal money comes back. And if you don't do it, then you've got this massive multi-billion-dollar hole in your Medicaid budget for the state, which is an increasingly large share. I mean, when you look at what the state budget has become over the course of the last couple decades, it's frightening. And most of that money is federal money that the state of Missouri spends.
Huh.
It's, I mean, wow.
And so who would be opposed to it? They just generally don't like the idea that there's a tax being imposed?
So in the Senate, in the state Senate, they're operating under the rule that you can filibuster.
Uh-huh.
And unlike in Washington, where nobody actually filibusters anymore, you just can't get 60 votes, so you just move on.
Right.
In Jeff City, you filibuster by standing on the floor.
That's what happened with the sports betting bill last year.
That's exactly.
I listened to Bill Igel on the floor talk and read from Ronald Reagan's book.
Right. And so this issue got caught up with a filibuster last year, and then it got the controversy was we didn't want any of this Medicaid money funding Planned Parenthood to fund abortions. So that's what the issue was last year.
So it's going to be used as a political football to show people you're standing up against taxes, et cetera,
right,
when it's far more complicated than that.
Yeah, and right. And it's, it should be, the FRA should be a no-brainer. But we'll see what happens. The other thing she talked about was a couple of our legislators want to eliminate the State Department of Education.
Huh.
And so... You know, that would not...
And so they just want to leave all the regulation up to the local areas?
Well, I'm not quite sure how they would fix that problem. I've seen it estimated.
I would imagine these folks are Republicans.
I would imagine if you actually did eliminate the State Department of Education, you'd have to have some kind of oversight. I've seen some speculation that it would actually cost more money to the state to split that thing up all over into different places. So we'll see, you know, what happens with that. Closing the Department of Education is a popular Republican issue nationally.
Why?
Nationally.
Why is it?
Because education is a function of the states. And a federal Department of Education is superfluous, and really the states ought to be able to run their own schools. That's the theory. And I happen to subscribe to that theory as a conservative. But to extrapolate getting rid of the federal Department of Education and say, okay, let's get rid of the State Department of Education, too, it's not the same issue.
You know, I find, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but sometimes it seems folks who say, well, it should be up to the states, are very selective on the issues they think it should be up to the states.
Sure.
It's not always across the board. It's certainly, I know that the abortion thing from last year, that was the whole foundation of it. It should be up to the states. But then you have people who want to make national 15-week bans or national rules that go along with abortion. But, well, wait a minute. I thought we were doing the local thing here. I thought we were doing states' rights things. Which is it? Mm-hmm. Either you're for states' rights across the board or you're not.
Well, the abortion issue is a little more. So under the Constitution, if the right is not enumerated in the Constitution, it is left to the states and to the people. Yeah, that's what the Constitution says. And the whole rationale over Roe is that the Supreme Court in 1973 created a right to an abortion that isn't anywhere enumerated in the Constitution. And the justices that wrote that decision had to extrapolate a right to privacy out of two or three different of the amendments. And a conservative jurist would say, well, it's not in the Constitution. If it's not in the Constitution, then the Constitution says it then is left up to the states or to the people. So in this case, the people's representatives are in Congress, And so I don't think there was ever an aversion to having a federal law on abortion. The aversion was that there was no right to an abortion in the Constitution. Now, having said all of that, there never will be a federal law on abortion because you'll never be able to get 60 votes in the U.S. Senate to pass one. So in effect, it is going to be left up to the states.
Hancock, okay. Kelly, Chris Ranji, okay. We'll take you all the way to the top of the hour. Listen okay. to this first.
Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer had a very shiny nose, and if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows.
Those of us of a certain age, or most of us probably, have probably figured that Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer has been around for a long, long time.
Centuries.
Yes. Goes all the way back to Germany. It was St. Nicholas or whatever the guy's name
yeah.
was.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
But no, no.
Santa Claus.
Rudolph was created in Chicago, Illinois, Ronj, your adopted hometown.
That's right.
And it was created by that great retail institution, Montgomery Ward.
Montgomery Ward.
Yeah, and you know all about Montgomery Ward.
I do. I always get it confused with Marshall Field's.
Different deal.
Because that was a different department store that's now a Macy's. And we know the Macy's takeover. They took Famous Bar from
they
us.
They did.
Now they're Macy's. Yeah. I love Macy's, though.
But Montgomery but yeah. Ward. And a big retailer in Chicago. And so they had a young, at the time, ad writer that worked for them, and he came from a family from New York. His father owned a lumber mill out of New York, and the Great Depression hit in the 1930s. It took the lumber mill out of business, and this young gentleman by the name of Robert L. May was a copywriter there for Montgomery Ward, and barely making ends meet. His wife had developed cancer, and he had a four-year-old daughter at home, and going about his work, trying to keep the house up and take care of his daughter and his service, his ill wife. And the young daughter came to him one year in the late 1930s and said, "Why isn't mommy like everybody else's mommy? She's in bed all day, and, you know." And he didn't know. I was a young father. And so he made up this story about this. He explained to his four-year-old daughter that not everybody's the same. And being different can be great, can be cool. And he makes up a story about this reindeer who had a red nose with a light bulb on it, and all the other reindeers didn't like him, and they wouldn't let him play, and he, this elaborate story, and she would make him tell her that story every night at bedtime. And when the Christmas season rolled around, Montgomery Ward used to have these little books that they would give out to kids at Christmas. They asked him to write a Christmas story for the kids. And so he thought, well, I've kind of made this thing up already. And he puts it down and writes it up. And he gets one of the artists there to draw pictures for the little picture book. Reads it to his family members. They loved it. And they thought, yeah, this would be good. So in 1939, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer was introduced to the public for the first time.
Wow.
Handed out 2 million copies at Montgomery Ward in Chicago that year. And then went on hiatus because there were restrictions on paper use during World War II. So Rudolph doesn't come back until 1947, and now they 3 million copies. And Montgomery Ward, which held the rights to this little booklet, decided that they would give, this would never happen today, but they gave the rights to Rudolph back to Robert L. May. And he tried to get a publisher, and they thought, well, the publishers thought, you know what, nobody's going to buy it, but they've already given out however many million copies for free. So one small publisher out of New York publishes the book. Robert L. May's sister married a musician who wrote Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer song. That was his brother-in-law. And they shopped it around to Bing Crosby. Nobody would take it. Finally, Gene Autry decided he would record it. It became, within 5 years, the second most recorded Christmas song throughout America.
That's a wild story.
Crazy story. And so he created Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer Incorporated, did Robert L. May, and died in 1971. But that is how Rudolph came to life.
I had no clue.
I had heard. I feel like I had heard this story before, and I'm looking it up as John is telling the story. And he wrote it in Lincoln Park, which is a neighborhood in Chicago, and it's right around the corner from a Starbucks I used to go to. So I think the place is actually still there. You could probably go and pay homage to this guy's house where he spent nights and weekends working on the. It was a poem,
right?
That he eventually came up with. You know, you mentioned Montgomery Ward, and it made me think of the Montgomery Ward headquarters, which is on the south branch of that river.
Yeah, it's right on the river.
And it's a huge building. And apparently, the building was so long that the people who worked as messengers or administrators in the building, administrative staff, assistants, would wear roller skates so they could get from one office to the next because the hallways were so long. And when they finally closed the building and that headquarters closed down, the story is they went into one of the rooms and there were just piles of roller skates.
Wow.
Because that's what all the office people
makes
used
sense,
to use.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it would totally
and the building
make
is
sense.
Really, it's like two football fields long.
Right.
At least.
And it's on the Chicago River there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Right there on Chicago
Have you ever
Avenue.
Done that architectural tour?
Yeah.
It's very cool.
It's the best thing to do in Chicago.
Yeah, on the boat?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very cool.
And they tell you about all the different architects that built the stuff.
Yeah.
You go right past this building.
You do. Yeah. I took the ghost tour also.
What?
Oh, that's a great one. They take you where Al Capone killed a bunch of people.
Oh.
The St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
Oh, yeah. Well, so the ghosts are still there, huh?
Well, they say that where this garage used to be, the where the massacre occurred, they've torn it down, but they say dogs bark when they're walking by it.
Well, boy, there's something you don't see every day, the dog barking.
Yeah, they say the dogs they go nuts when they go by this spot. I don't know, man. That's
Al
what
Capone,
the ghost people tell me.
He died fairly young, but boy, he did a lot, didn't he? I mean,
he died of syphilis.
Yeah, well,
in jail.
How old were you?
Oh,
yeah, he had like complications from syphilis. He went nuts.
Yeah.
That'd be a tough way to go. Well, didn't they have penicillin?
I don't think so.
Scott Joplin died of syphilis.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Poor guy. He died at 48.
So did Scott Joplin.
Really?
Yeah.
And I mean, you think that I've been places. There's places in South Florida where Al Capone was a big deal. He obviously in Chicago. He ran Chicago. He had some things out in L.A.
You know what that means? If you get syphilis, you don't have to worry about paying for your 50th birthday party.
Oh, wow. That's true. Depends on how early you get it, though.
Right.
Because I hear it's rampant in nursing homes.
Is that right?
Well, STDs are.
Why wouldn't it be? It's college for old people.
I don't know if syphilis itself, but STDs is a thing in some nursing homes.
That same thing with that
careful.
Place down in Florida. What's it called? The Village?
I didn't know they were getting
the
that
villages?
Frisky, though.
Yeah. Oh, heck yeah. It's college for these older folks.
I didn't know that.
Covered Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and syphilis in nursing homes all in the same segment, Raj. There's a first.
I didn't know Grandma and Grandpa were getting after it.
How about that?
Good
wow.
Chris Ranji,
practice
thank you so
perfect.
Much. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Michael Kelly and I will be back after this. Andy Banker from Fox 2, our partner and moderator, is going to join us next hour right here on Cable X.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny nose. And if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows.
Those of us of a certain age, or most of us probably, have probably figured that Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer has been around for a long, long time.
Centuries.
Yes. Goes all the way back to Germany. It was St. Nicholas or whatever the guy's name
was. Yeah,
that's right.
But no.
Santa Claus.
Rudolph was created in Chicago, Illinois, Ranj, your adopted hometown.
That's right.
And it was created by that great retail institution, Montgomery Ward.
Montgomery Ward.
Yeah, and you know all about Montgomery Ward.
I do. I always get it confused with Marshall Field's.
Different deal.
Because that was a different department store that's now a Macy's. And we know the Macy's takeover. They took Famous Bar from
they
us.
They did.
Now they're Macy's.
Yeah.
I love Macy's, though.
But Montgomery Ward. And the big retailer in Chicago. And so they had a young, at the time, ad writer that worked for them, and he came from a family from New York. His father owned a lumber mill out of New York, and The Great Depression hit in the 1930s. It took the lumber mill out of business, and this young gentleman by the name of Robert L. May was a copywriter there for Montgomery Ward, and barely making ends meet. His wife had developed cancer, and he had a four-year-old daughter at home, and going about his work, trying to keep the house up and take care of his daughter and service his ill wife. And the young daughter came to him one year in the late 1930s and said, "Why isn't mommy like everybody else's mommy? She's in bed all day, and, you know." And he didn't know. I was a young father. And so he made up this story about this. He explained to his four-year-old daughter that not everybody's the same. And being different can be great, can be cool. And he makes up a story about this reindeer who had a red nose with a light bulb on it. And all the other reindeers didn't like him, and they wouldn't let him play. And this elaborate story, and she would make him tell her that story every night at bedtime. And when the Christmas season rolled around, Montgomery Ward used to have these little books that they would give out to kids at Christmas. They asked him to write a Christmas story for the kids. And so he thought, well, I've kind of made this thing up already. And he puts it down and writes it up. And he gets one of the artists there to draw pictures for the little picture book. Reads it to his family members. They loved it. And they thought, yeah, this would be good. So in 1939, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer was introduced to the public for the first time.
Wow.
Handed out 2 million copies at Montgomery Ward in Chicago that wow. year. And then went on hiatus because there were restrictions on paper use during World War II. So Rudolph doesn't come back until 1947, and now they 3 million copies. And Montgomery Ward, which held the rights to this little booklet, decided that they would give – this would never happen today – but they gave the rights to Rudolph back to Robert L. May. And he tried to get a publisher, and they thought – well, the publishers thought, you know what, nobody's going to buy it, but they've already given out however many million copies for free. So one small publisher out of New York publishes the book. Robert L. May's sister married a musician who wrote Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer song. That was his brother-in-law. And they shopped it around to Bing Crosby. Nobody would take it. Finally, Gene Autry decided he would record it. It became, within 5 years, the second most recorded Christmas song throughout America.
That's a wild story.
Crazy story. And so he created Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer Incorporated, did Robert L. May, and died in 1971. But that is how Rudolph came to life.
I had no clue.
I feel like I had heard this story before, and I'm looking it up as John is telling the story. And he wrote it in Lincoln Park, which is a neighborhood in Chicago, right. And it's right around the corner from a Starbucks I used to go to. So I think the place is actually still there. You could probably go and pay homage to this guy's house where he spent nights and weekends working on the – it was a poem that he eventually came up with. You know, you mentioned Montgomery Ward, and it made me think of the Montgomery Ward headquarters, which is on the south branch of that river.
Yeah, it's right on the river.
And it's a huge building. And apparently the building was so long that the people who worked as messengers or administrators in the building, administrative staff assistants, would wear roller skates so they could get from one office to the next because the hallways were so long. And when they finally closed the building and that headquarters closed down, the story is they went into one of the rooms and there were just piles of roller skates.
Wow.
Because that's what all the office people
makes
used to
sense,
use.
Makes sense, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
And the building is
sense.
Really, it's like two football fields long.
Right.
At least.
And it's on the Chicago River there, right?
Yeah. Right there on Chicago
Avenue.
Have you ever
done that architectural tour?
Yeah.
It's very cool.
It's the best thing to do in Chicago.
Yeah, on the boat?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very cool.
And they tell you about all the different architects that built the stuff.
Yeah.
You go right past this building.
You do. I took the ghost tour also.
What?
Oh, that's a great one. They take you where Al Capone killed a bunch of people.
Oh.
The St. Valentine's Day Massacre.
Oh, yeah. Well, so the ghosts are still there, huh?
Well, they say that where this garage used to be, where the massacre occurred, they've torn it down, but they say dogs bark when they're walking by it.
Well, boy, there's something you don't see every day, a dog barking.
Yeah, they say the dogs they go nuts when they go by this spot. I don't know, man. That's what the ghost people tell me.
He died fairly young, but boy, he did a lot, didn't he? I mean,
he died of syphilis.
Yeah, well,
in jail.
How old were you?
Oh.
Okay. Yeah, he had like complications from syphilis. He went nuts. Yeah.
That'd be a tough way to go. Well, right. Didn't they have penicillin?
I don't think so.
Scott Joplin died of syphilis.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Poor guy. He died at 48.
So did Scott Joplin.
Really?
Yeah.
And that's, but I mean, you think that I've been places, there's places in
South Florida where
Al Capone was a big deal. He obviously in Chicago, he ran Chicago. He had some things out in L.A.
You know what that means? If you get syphilis, you don't have to worry about paying for your 50th birthday party.
Oh, wow. That's true. Depends on how early you get it, though.
Right.
Because I hear it's rampant in nursing homes.
Is that right?
Well, STDs are.
Why wouldn't it be? It's college for old people.
I don't know if syphilis itself, but STDs is a thing.
Yeah.
In some nursing homes.
That same thing with that place down in Florida. What's it called? The Village?
I didn't know they were getting that frisky, though.
Yeah. Oh, heck yeah. It's college for these older folks.
I didn't know that.
Covered Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer and syphilis in nursing homes all in the same segment, Raj. There's a first.
I didn't know Grandma and Grandpa were getting after it.
How about that?
Good
wow. Chris Ranji, thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon. Michael Kelly and I will be back after this. Andy Banker from Fox 2, our partner and moderator, is going to join us next hour right here on Cable X. You go now.